RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Michaela Community School is an 11 to 18 year mixed free secondary school in sixth form in Wembley, Greater London, England. It was established in September 2014 with Catherine Birbal-Singh as head teacher and Suella Braveman as the first chair of governors. It's been described as the strictest school in Britain and achieved among the best GCSE results in the nation among its first cohort of students. And in both 22 and 23, the value added or progress score at GCSE was the highest for any school in England. Catherine Birbal-Singh is with us. Hi, Catherine. Thanks for coming on our radio station.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Are you comfortable with that label, the strictest school in Britain? The strictest?
Well, I've got used to it. People often think that strict is bad, but, you know, it just means that you love the children enough to keep your standards really high for them. And the children are happy at Michaela. They feel very loved and looked after. They're taught well. They, of course, learn lots, and they wouldn't want to be anywhere else. So, you know, people can call us what they like.
Yeah, fair enough. Founding and then being the headmistress of this school, how did you get to that?
Free schools in this country, they're based on the charter schools in America. When you're opening up, you can have what's called like a principal designate. And so that's what I was. So I was one of a bunch of people who were setting up the school. And then when the school was set up, I was then made into the principal or the headmistress of the school.
Yeah. Obviously, you were in the zone for what you were about to do. When did you... Have you always thought this about education, how schools should operate?
I always thought we could do better.
Mm-hmm.
And it took us 3.5 years to set up. It was a lot of work, and lots of people tried to stop us from setting up. We'd get protests, and I mean, you wouldn't believe it, really. Because in the day, free schools were quite controversial, because they only started in 2010 with the conservative government at the time, and David Cameron was our prime minister. And so there were a lot of people on the left who hated free schools, and anyone who was trying to set one up, they would get into trouble. But after the 3.5 years, we finally managed to open in 2014. We've been going now for 10 years, and we've done very well with our results and so on. But we have had to fight quite hard in order to succeed, because I suppose of the nature that it's a free school, and free schools were a conservative idea.
We're going down the charter school route again. We've done it before, but it was cancelled when the government changed. It's coming again. And there does seem to be a lot of institutional opposition to charter schools or free schools. Why do you think that is, given that you've got successes that you can show?
Yeah, well, the teaching unions feel that free schools are breaking up the system. I mean, they're right. They do break up the system. And the leaders of the unions would be more powerful without free schools. And they want the monolith approach because it just makes them stronger. So they do a lot of campaigning, and they convince people that free schools, you know, you wouldn't want to work there because otherwise you'll lose your job, or they're going to treat children badly, that they're going to be outside the law. But this is privatization. So that's what they used to say all the time. They were privatizing the system, which, I mean, is ridiculous. A free school is just a normal school. It's just that the money goes directly from central government to the school instead of going via the local council. But other than that, it is just the normal school. We have to follow the same admissions processes, the same laws and rules as everyone else. So I have to say, people have sort of calmed down about that now here. But whenever anything's new, people can get lied to, and then they believe the lies. And there was a lot of opposition here, but nowadays people sort of accept them and it's fine.
In terms of the philosophy, it's teacher-centered learning, as I understand it, rather than student-centered learning. Maybe the difference is obvious, but there's probably more to it than that. Why was there a move to student-centered learning? I'm thinking back to my days at school, it was very much teacher-centered. But
yes.
How come it changed? What drove that change?
Well, I think a lot of people, and no doubt some of your listeners might think, when I was at school, things were a bit boring. I'd sit and listen to a teacher drone on for ages, and actually it would be much more interesting to make learning interactive. That's how people think. And then that it moves from that to thinking, actually, you know, when you're in the workplace, you sit and discuss things around tables with people, and there are breakout spaces, and it's not like it is at school. What we need to do is make school more like the workplace. And so they're trying to make it more interesting. But actually, the reality is that children cannot lead their own learning. You know, if you're working in PR and you meet with two other PR people and you sit down around a table and discuss your plan for your next client, you're all experts at what you do. Children are not experts, so they can't possibly run the room. They can't sit down at a table with some sugar paper and write down interesting things. They just can't. But we like to pretend that they can. And so, because we like to think that they're experts and that they're adults, and it makes us feel like we're putting them in the real world. We're not. We're actually just wasting their time. Yeah. So they'll end up writing down something, but they don't know anywhere near as much as the teacher. If the teacher, on the other hand, is leading the learning and leading the classroom, the children feel safe and looked after, and they learn loads, and they feel smart, and they become smart because the teacher is teaching them. But if the teacher is only a facilitator of learning instead of an actual teacher, then the children just don't learn very much at all. And sadly, that has been going on now for about 40 or 50 years. Mm. So, we need to go back to traditional education. That is very much what Michaela stands for. And we get 800 visitors a year who come, and they go around the classrooms, and people can't believe what they see, because the kids are learning so much, they've never seen anything like it.
yeah, sounds like Trump.
Yeah.
You've never seen anything like it. Yeah. do you see the difference then, because students who come to the school have come from, another version of education, then they've flipped into this. What do you see? What changes do you see?
They suddenly just learn more. They know more. I don't sit down and talk to my children about science. They'll know more science than I do, and I'm being totally serious. It's amazing how much they learn and they remember. They then end up having interesting ideas. So people often think, no, you don't want to teach children lots because that will stop them from being critical thinkers, when it's quite the opposite. It's when people know lots about something that they can have interesting ideas about it and they can think independently about it. When you don't know much about a subject, then you can't possibly think critically about it because you don't know anything. So our kids then have loads of opinions. They have lots of confidence. And they even though we're in the inner city with very, normally like deprived inner city kids, despite that, our kids come across as if they're at some top private school. And frankly, even the private school kids, it's hard to compete with our kids because of the style of teaching.
The role of discipline. How far do you go with discipline before it comes authoritarian kind of control? Can you inform us about the balance there?
So the key thing with discipline, and any good mom knows this, children have agency. And you need to be able to give children the choice between right and wrong. You have to explain to them if you do X, Y will happen. If you do A, B will happen. And so they can then choose. And if they choose to do the wrong thing, then you follow through with the punishment. Now, obviously, if you're beating children to death, that's bad. But giving them a 20-minute detention is really no big deal. They do a bit of work and they go home. Who cares, you know?
Yeah.
And the thing is, they quickly learn not to do that naughty thing again. And so you find that all the children then are listening in the lesson. Their hands are up. They're engaged. And that then allows a culture to embed across the school where the children are just learning loads and loads and loads. And they're happy. If, on the other hand, you're allowing them to get away with stuff, if you don't have a naughty step at home for your children where you say, right, that's 2 minutes on the naughty step, if you never tell children off, then they'll just get away with murder. And they'll never really learn self-control. It's our jobs as adults to restrict their freedom when they're younger so that they can be truly free when they are older. I find that the progressives tend to do it the other way around. They let children run around like crazy and have loads of freedom. And then when they're older, they want to restrict their freedom.
Yeah.
Well, they have to restrict their freedom because they didn't allow them to be, supported, well supported when they were younger, so that they would learn the habits that are needed to be able to succeed as a free adult. It's a grave mistake of ours to think that children are adults. They are not adults. They're children, and it's our duty to look after them.
How clinical should an education be? Is it purely to gain knowledge to get reasonable jobs so you're, you know, functionally literate and you can spell and string sentences together? How far do you go in trying to be, I don't know, holistic? Is that the word? How clinical is it versus maybe not?
Yeah, well, we're very much about the whole child. I certainly don't think that you're only learning English and maths in order to get a job. You're learning your English and your maths and your science and so on for the sake of learning, so that you know stuff about the world, so that you can live an interesting life, so that when you go walking in the hills, you know something about the trees around you and the hills around you and so on. And you know how the world works. So it's to be able to find, to live a profound life and be able to understand the world around you. Now, that will also help you get a job, of course, because you will know stuff, and knowing stuff is good. But there's also larger things than just English and maths. There's turning up on time. There's building in the habit of always bringing the right equipment. There's being polite to people, being kind to people, demonstrating gratitude, having a duty towards other people, understanding what self-sacrifice is, being part of a team and working in the team for the better of not for yourself, but for everyone. Understanding personal responsibility, making sure that you can go home and do your homework and have agency and use your agency to make the world a better place. You know, you want children to learn all of that and more. And that happens over years through habit. At first you give them detentions, and then eventually they just want to impress you. And a culture embeds in the child where it just becomes part of who they are. They are somebody who always turns up in time. They always do their homework. They always smile at you. They always shake your hand and look you in the eye. That they know how to turn up at an interview and sit up straight and be prepared for it. And so, you know, they're going to do better in everything. I don't just mean getting the job. They're going to get the job, but they'll also get the girlfriend, and they'll also end up with a lovely family, and they'll be on top of things. They'll know how to make the most of their lives. And that ultimately is what every family and every school should be doing for children. But it does mean, you know, there's a quote that I always quote to my families at school, which is that you can be friends with your children either when they are children or when they are adults, but you cannot be both.
Yeah.
And so you have to choose. When they're children, we're not meant to be friends with them. We're meant to lead them, and we're meant to protect them. We're meant to challenge them. And we're meant to help instill those habits in them, and that will make them future successful adults.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one from personal experience. So now I want to ask you about genders, if you don't mind. So it's mixed school, right, of genders?
Yes.
I mean, male and female. Yeah, girls and boys.
Yeah.
I know boys are struggling in education in many areas. Do you have any particular strategy for that, or And what are your thoughts on the gender sort of divide there?
Yeah, it's funny. One of our guests today, she said the same thing to me. She said, oh, I'm meant to be in charge of boys. What intervention strategies do you have? What do you do for boys? So if people say to me, what do you do for your special needs pupils? What do you do for your disadvantaged pupils? What do you do for your black kids or your white kids or your whichever group of kids that people are saying are failing? It doesn't matter. Whoever they are, forget about the different types of kids. Just get your discipline right and teach well.
I promise you that
if you get your discipline right and if you teach well and if the teachers are leading the learning and if you are an authority in the classroom and if there is consistency across all of the classrooms, if you do that well, your most vulnerable kids will benefit.
Yep.
So whichever group it is that is currently failing, they will stop failing because that whole, you know, a ship lifts with the tide, right? So you just have to, you lift the whole school and your most vulnerable kids will benefit from that.
So though, why, I'm curious, why, and maybe, you know, sort of figure out the answer to this, but why have boys sort of ended up where they are now, particularly in education, do you think?
Yeah, well, nowadays, this whole conversation around toxic masculinity and the patriarchy and boys are lost, not just boys, but young men and men full stop are lost. They don't really know what their role is. They're made to feel bad about who they are. Boys often like competition. They like to be challenged. They like the clarity of knowing this is the game. This is how you play it. This is how you go after what you want. If everything's a bit woolly and softly, and too, well, feminine, really, that is not going to benefit boys. So there's nothing wrong with some things being feminine, but if it's all too feminine, then boys will not do as well in that kind of environment. And so you really do need to drive them. But for that, like I say, you need to have the clarity of excellent teaching. You need your explanations to be clear. You need to challenge them in the classroom, merits and demerits that are being handed out. And they know if I do this, I get a merit. If I do that, I get a demerit. I've got a bank of merits that I'm in charge of. I know what the game is and I need to play it. If I give an excellent piece of homework, I'm going to get 10 merits. If it's not so good, I'm only going to get 2. I might get a detention. That consistency is going to help them throughout the school. I would say ultimately it's the same for girls too. It's just that, boys will,
what?
Boys are likely to fall apart faster if they don't get that sort of thing.
Right. No, I understand what you're saying. Okay. Coming up against time, a few more questions before we're done. What's the mix of male, female teachers that you've got? Just curious.
I do have quite a number. I mean, I couldn't tell you exactly because we don't look at that kind of thing. But I do have a number of male teachers. I mean, you might say, if there's just loads of female teachers, then boys won't do so well. But you know, it's interesting because 100 years ago, they were mainly female teachers in the schools. So there were more female teachers than there are nowadays. So it's having female teachers is an issue. It's whether or not everything, the feminine characteristics around it being soft and too, the challenge isn't there in the way that it should be. Now, women can do that, and they certainly used to do that. But I would say both men and women in schools nowadays shy away from that. We have a culture around, you don't want to push them. You don't want to give them exams. In fact, our education secretary, I should say, here in Britain, has recently come out with a big speech saying we shouldn't, schools shouldn't concentrate on exams. We should concentrate on well-being and mental health instead.
Oh, God, really?
And so that kind of thing will ultimately, the irony is, you concentrate on well-being and mental health, you undermine children's well-being and mental health. because it's through having a challenge and an aim and driving towards that aim that your mental health is actually going to thrive. But the aim of an exam will give you purpose. It's purpose that allows you to feel like you have agency and a reason to get up in the morning. People just don't understand. They don't get it. And unfortunately, I do think boys in particular will suffer from that. As we have seen young men, that's why there is such a huge following of, say, Jordan Peterson, for instance, when he's basically telling young men, you know, clean your room, pull your shoulders back, you know, pull yourself together and get on with it. That kind of attitude is more what they need.
Just to finish up, it's quite an achievement that you've had here, that you've created this school and it's doing incredibly well by the, you know, the reporting of the results. You must feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, it is great. I love my school and we have a great time with the kids. I love the staff, but it is hard because we're having to fight a culture out there that is quite the opposite to what we believe. What we've been fighting for the last 14 years, I've been involved in this project and we continue to fight. And it is worth it because, I mean, we even have people from over your way, New Zealand and Australia, you know, people come over to see us and they learn lots and they take stuff back to their own countries in New Zealand and Australia, but also across Europe and America and Canada and so on. So I do see us having impact across the world, which is really nice. And there are people who write to me from all over the world saying, thank goodness you're saying what you're saying. I always knew that this was the right way.
Yeah.
So, you know, to your listeners, any teachers out there, I just say, you know, keep going. If you're a traditionalist and you're considered old-fashioned, well, good for you because you're doing what's right by children.
Thank you for the chat, Catherine Birbal-Singh, founder and headmistress of Michaela Community School, London, Britain's strictest school. Really interesting hearing what you had to say. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.